Yaha, Yaha.
He who
Namavihi
by different names.
Vachi to the Vedic language. Janam all people. Yujayam, which is emanated from himself. Bodnate binds. Tantriyam to a rope. Iva like. Dhammavehe by cords. Gaha bowls. Yasmai unto whom? Balim a small presentation of taxes. Take all of them. Ime these. Namakarma of names and different activities. Nibandha by the obligations. Badaha bound. Chakita being fearful. Vahante carry. The translation, just as the driver of a bullock cart ties ropes through the nostrils of his bulls to control them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all men through the ropes of his words in the Vedas, which set forth the names and activities of the distinct orders of human society, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. In fear, the members of these orders all worship the Supreme Lord by offering him presentations according to their respective activities. So purport by divine grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. In this material world, everyone is conditioned, regardless of who he is. One may be a human being, a demigod, or an animal, tree, or plant, but everything is controlled by the laws of nature. And behind this natural control is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, text 10, wherein Krishna says, Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sa chara chanam. The material nature is working under my direction and producing all moving and non-moving beings. Thus, Krishna is behind the natural machine, which works under his control. Apart from other living entities, the living being in the human form of body is systematically controlled by the Vedic injunctions in terms of the divisions of varna and ashrama. A human being is expected to follow the rules and regulations of varna and ashram, otherwise he cannot escape punishment by Yamaraj. The point is that every human being is expected to elevate himself to the position of a brahmana, the most intelligent man. And then one must transcend that position to become a Vaishnava. This is the perfection of life. The brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, and shudra can elevate themselves by worshipping the Lord according to their activities. Sve sve karmanya virata sangsidhin lavate naraha. The divisions of varna and ashram are necessary to ensure the proper execution of duties and peaceful existence for everyone. But everyone is directed to worship the Supreme Lord, who is all-pervading, yena sarvam idam tatam. The Supreme Lord exists vertically and horizontally, otam, Proktam. And therefore, if one follows the Vedic injunctions by worshipping the Supreme Lord according to one's ability, his life will be perfect, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text 13. Takumbir dvija shreshta varnashama vibhagashaha swanusti tashyadharma shah sang siddhir hori toshanam. O best among the twice-born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, dharma, according to caste divisions and orders of life, is to please Lord Hari. The Varnashram institution offers the perfect process for making one eligible to return home back to Godhead, because the aim of every Varna and Ashram is to please the Supreme Lord. one can please the Lord under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, and if one does so, his life is perfect. Jai Shishi Radha Radha Kanta Gauranatai Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki Jai. The Supreme Lord is worshipable, and everyone worships him directly or indirectly. Those who worship him directly get the results of liberation quickly, whereas the liberation of those who serve him indirectly is delayed. The words Namavir, Va Chi are very important. In the Varnashram institution, there are different names: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasi. The Vak or Vedic injunctions give directions for all these divisions. Everyone is expected to offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord and perform duties as indicated in the Vedas. Yo namavir vachi janam dijoyam budhati tatyam ivadam dirgaha yasmai balim tangime nama karma divandavadas chakita vahanti. So, Om Gadat Sivadanda Shah Gadanjana Shlakaya Chakshurim Vintam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So here we can discuss the Varna Ashram system. Varna Ashram system means the four orders of spiritual life and the four social orders. Four social orders, of course, are the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. The four orders of spiritual life are the Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. So let's talk about the social orders first, because that's quite interesting. Social orders are based basically upon what mode of nature one's body is in. That is actually quite an interesting concept, because although one may be a transcendentalist, one has gotten a particular body that has certain proclivities or propensities and inclinations, you know, even if you're a pure devotee, that body still has the same inclinations, propensities, proclivities, or whatever. Just like you have the case of Arjuna, who's a pure devotee. And he wanted to follow other propensities and proclivities and become, let's say, a renunciate, because he wanted to renounce his duty, which according to Krishna and the Gita is renunciation in the mode of passion, to renounce one's duties because of difficulty. And then Krishna said to him that by your nature you're going to be forced to fight anyway. So in other words, if he took sannyas, what type of sannyas would that be? He'd end up fighting with all the other sannyasis. You know, boom, boom, like that. No, it's my Mahaprasadam. No, it's my Mahaprasadam. So he would fight with the different sannyasis. An example of that in Arjuna's own life is when Arjuna was performing austerities to worship Lord Shiva to get weapons. He was performing great austerities, and as he was performing austerities, this big boar began to attack him. By boar, I don't mean a boring devotee. I mean a pig with tusks on it. You know, that's what a boar is. It's pronounced the same way, but it's written differently. B-O-R-E or B-O-A-R. So this big pig, wild pig, was attacking him with tusks and rah, you know, going after him. And Arjuna, of course, pulled out his bow and arrows and struck the pig. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Because if someone's attacking you, you have a right to kill them. You have a right to kill attackers, person who sets fire to your house, person who kidnaps your wife, etc. So, but at the same time, there was a karata, a hunter there, or apparently he was a hunter, and he also shot his arrow and hit the boar. So what happened is that Arjuna got very upset that the hunter had shot his arrow at the boar. Now, had he been a Brahmin, he would have said, thank you very much. You know, if a boar was attacking me and some hunter shot his arrow at it, I would have said, well, thank you, Maharaj, but thank you, Mr. Hunter, for protecting me. But Arjuna, because, basically, because of passion, he was thinking, you know, I could have done it myself. This is nonsense. And he got angry at the Kurata, or the hunter. And see, he got so angry that he challenged the hunter to a fight. You know, someone saves you, you want to fight with them? That's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, but not for a Kshatriya. Because it's, you know, there's this martial spirit, there's this competitive spirit. Everything's competitive for a Kshatriya. And so, basically, so there ensued a fight between this Kurata and Arjuna, and actually, Arjuna basically was losing. But it was such an intense fight that while they were fighting, both their bodies were rubbing against each other and sparks were flying. This is a story from the Mahabharata, actually. The sparks were flying everywhere. Finally, Arjuna fell down, you know, unconscious, and he thought, wow, what's happening? I must not have worshipped Lord Shiva properly. So he began to worship this little Shiva Linga he made on the ground, put a garland on the Shiva Linga. And then he looked up and he saw the same garland was on the hunter. So he figured, you know, I've been fighting with Lord Shiva. Which is not such a good idea. And he apologized, obviously. But the point I'm making, and of course Lord Shiva was very pleased and he gave him weapons and he enabled him to go to the heavenly planets and later on learned so many things, weapons and dancing in the heavenly planets. However, the purpose of that story is to illustrate the point that Arjuna was forced to fight by his nature. Because everybody has a specific nature. I mean, for example, if someone's a Vaishya, and you send a Vaishya to the forest to meditate, he'll think of selling the trees. Right? Think, you know, how much, this is a pine tree, you know, how much would the logger pay for this one? And then he'll start digging for gold or diamonds in the forest, or going through the streams looking for gold. And if someone's a Shudra, he's just going to look for someone. Anyway, he was going to take the sap from the tree, let it ferment, and drink it. Just like in Mayapur, you have the, you know, the sap that comes from the trees, the palm tree. And everybody knows that if you let it sit until the afternoon, it becomes alcoholic. And so some devotees do that. They say, oh, it's prasadam. Even in the early days of the movement, this is a secret, that we would have this nectar drink on Sunday with fruit in it. You remember this, Evie. You had the, you know, fruit and sugar and everything like that. And so by Wednesday, it was bubbling. And the brahmacharis would drink it and their eyes would roll. You remember that? And they'd say, well, it's prasadam, and everything offered to the deities is pure. It can't be contaminated. And so this way they were getting drunk in a legal way. So anyway, you really can't take the nature out of a human being, you know, the psychophysical nature. Therefore, it's very important that the human being be engaged according to the psychophysical nature, even if you're a devotee. I mean, for some time, yes, emergency situations are described in the Gita. Then certain things can be done that you wouldn't ordinarily do in an emergency situation. But under normal circumstances, you have to be able to work according to your nature, because otherwise your mind will be uncontrolled. The whole principle of Krishna consciousness is to be conscious of Krishna. That sounds like a tautology. Krishna consciousness, be conscious of Krishna. But the only way you're going to be conscious of Krishna is to survive mana Krishna padara vindeo by engaging your senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. By engaging your senses in Krishna's service. And the only way you're going to be able to engage your senses in a practical way is to engage your senses according to the way the senses are formed, according to the modes of nature. And then you can do that. And then you can engage your senses 24 hours a day if you're doing something that fun for you. I mean, Krishna consciousness, this may come as a surprise, but Krishna consciousness should be fun. You know, sometimes we look at the devotees, and they're not having fun. They're just like sleeping during Bhagavatam class or other things like that, or I mean, you can see by people's faces whether they're smiling or not. It's frightening. I think it's not Halloween, Prabhu. What do you have that face on? So that means that someone has to be engaged in doing something that they like to do. If you're an artist, in other words, Varnashram is very simple. If you're an artist, you paint for Krishna. If you're an intellectual, you juggle words for Krishna. You study and you preach. If you're a businessman, you do business for Krishna. Nothing wrong. Prabhupada said one who's working in the factory is as good as a sannyasi. Because if he's giving the results to Krishna, not that he's working it. I mean, that's a misunderstanding of karma yoga that some people have. Some people say karma yoga means just to do what I'm doing and give everything to my family, but not be attached, which is impossible anyway. You ever hear that? People give that explanation of karma yoga. But yoga means to connect, and karma means work. It means to connect yourself to Krishna through work. Yat kuroshi, yat asnasi, yat jahoshi, tadasi yat. Yat tapasushi kantiya, tat kurushwana marapranam. That's the definition of karma yoga right there. Whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away should be done as an offering to me. So if you're working in the factory, then what you do is you give the results. What do the results mean? Results means money. You know, let's get down to the brass tacks. Results don't mean that, you know, I give my money, all my money to my family, and then when I get old, 95 years old, my family turns me over to Krishna, ISKCON movement. Like Prabhupada said that one time, that, you know, some family came to drop their 95-year-old father off at the temple. Said, will you take him? You know, he's given us all of his money, you know, it's all right now. Prabhupada said, this is not a good deal. You know, Prabhupada, of course, was expert with business, too. You know, it's not a good deal, you know. We just have to take care of some old man who can't do any service anymore. And you get all the money, you know. Of course, you know, we're compassionate to old people, obviously. I'm one of them. So, you have to have compassion. But at the same time, the idea is, you know, practically if one's working a job, I mean, obviously you take care of your family and you engage your family in Krishna consciousness, you give money to your family, but, you know, you also give a substantial amount to the Krishna consciousness movement, to spread the movement. Just like you find in the different religion, like Catholic religion, Mormon religion, there's always this concept of tithing. But, you know, if I mention tithing to the devotees, they have a heart attack. Isn't it? Or even if I mention what Prabhupada said about 50%, you know, that's... They rejoin the Jewish temple after that. That's why I'm in the wrong religion, Prabhu. You know, maybe the Gaudiya Mathur would be good for me. Or I don't have to chant 16 rounds, you know, don't have to... There's only three regulated principles. You know, it's a lot easier, you know. So, you know... Like Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness for people who want a valuable diamond, you know, it's not, of course they don't have 5 and 10 cent stores anymore. But, you know, it's not dollar stores. Now they have dollar stores. It's not, you know, just like you can buy cheap jewelry in Walmart. I mean, I actually know someone who got married and he bought his wife a wedding ring in Walmart for some other store like that for $5. You know, plastic. Marriage didn't last very long after that. And then, I mean, it was just a very short honeymoon. So, you know, if you actually want to get married, you better go spend money for a diamond ring, at least. At least cubic zirconium. It's imitation diamond. But at least something that looks like a diamond, not plastic that... The scratches. So, I mean, Krishna consciousness is like that. It's not like the plastic ring. You know, so you have to pay the price. I mean, so for a Vaishya, it means paying the price. You know, literally. And for Shudra, working hard. You know, coming to the temple and, you know, helping construct things, fix things in the temple. And it's a practical service for everybody. And for a Kshatriya, not simply fighting, that's a misconception that people have. I'm a Kshatriya, I like to fight. No, if you like to fight, that means you're a Shudra. A Kshatriya likes to defend. That's what the meaning of the word Kshatriya is. You know, Kshatriyate, to free someone from harm. That's the meaning of the word Kshatriya. Kshatriya, you know, like a Kshatriya sees someone crossing the street, he'll go and, you know, stop the traffic and help them cross the street. The Kshatriya also likes to manage. And then also, of course, the Brahmin. And the Brahmin likes to preach, the Brahmin likes to, yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana pratigraha. Isn't it like we saw all these Brahmins with their rabbit ears yesterday? You know the rabbit ears?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's bona fide, but anyway, it looks interesting. We never had them when Prabhupada was present. Something new has been added. So anyway, so I saw all the Brahmins with their rabbit ears on the cart yesterday, you know, doing the puja like that. Elephant ears, okay. Sorry, I thought it was rabbit ears. So, and then you're happy doing that. You know, it's very nice. And you can do it for 12 hours a day. So the point is, if you want to know what your nature is, it's very easy to understand. What you can do for 12 hours a day without going crazy. We can do many things. I mean, just like myself, for example, I know how to do many things. I know how to fix cars, I know how to do construction. But if you ask me to do it for more than a half an hour a day, it's just like I want to jump off a building, you know, and just like scream. You know, because a Brahmin can know how to do a lot of things. A Brahmin can teach how to do a lot of things. But a Brahmin is not really inclined to do that all day long. So that's how you understand what your psychophysical nature is. By what you can do 12 hours a day and be happy and joyful. That's to say, Krishna consciousness joyfully perform, kevalananda kanda. Because your service is non-different than Krishna. This famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, what is it? Brahma arpanam, brahma habir, brahmagno, brahmana uttam, brahma tena gantavya, brahma karma samadhanam. The famous verse, actually, there's another group, they chant that all the time, the Brahma Kumaris. You may know them. But anyway, that verse is from the Gita. It means if you make Brahmarpanam Brahma, if you offer something to the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, Havya referring to ghee, you know, there's a metaphorical understanding in that verse that ghee is our offering to Krishna in a sacrifice. So if you're not a Brahmin, then you're offering your work. Or anybody's offering their work. Brahmarpanam Brahma Havya Brahmagno Brahmana Hutam. So by offering that, the offering becomes spiritualized. The person who makes the offering becomes spiritualized. And everything becomes spiritualized. Like Prabhupada says, a transformation from matter to spirit. So our work is actually, sometimes you even say, our worship is work, or our work is worship. It's interesting, isn't it? So our work for Krishna is worship. We have to see like that. Even if it's just cleaning the toilets, that's worship. And it's just as valuable to Krishna as offering the puja on the altar. It's just as valuable. We don't look down upon someone just because he's a bhangi for Krishna. You know, bhangi? That means the people clean the streets. And I don't know, in Bengal you have that same word? I know in UP that. Yeah, same thing in Bengal. Yeah, UP, I was just going on these bungies there, anyway. So, it's just as valuable. If you're clean, and especially in the temple, like every part of the temple is considered to be an expansion of Baladev. Every part of the Holy Dham, every part of the temple is like Baladev. So you're cleaning the just like we chant every morning, what Mandira Marjanadu. The devotees, along with the guru along with the disciples, is engaged in cleansing the temple of the Lord. So it's all wonderful spiritual activity. So therefore, we should ascertain, in fact, that's one of the duties of the guru, is to ascertain the psychophysical nature of the disciple and engage them accordingly. Very easy to see. I mean, there's another story from the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, the Pandavas, they won Draupadi. And of course, that was Drupada's whole assembly where Arjuna had to fire the arrow and the eye of the fish and everything like that. But the Pandavas were in disguise as Brahmanas. So Drupada, he really wanted to see what Varna they were. So what did he do? When they came to his palace, he put out the different implements for the different Varnas. For example, he put out, you know, swords and bows and arrows for Kshatriyas. For Brahmanas, I guess he put out books. For Vaishyas, he put out some money. Just like we do with children sometimes, isn't it? And for Shudras, I guess he put out some shovels or something like that. So, I mean, just like you see. I mean, here in America, you see himself as a Shudra, and they go immediately for the chainsaw. Not a shovel, you know, something more fancy, a chainsaw or a still, you know, still is actually the most famous brand of chainsaws. So, I mean, and the Pandavas went immediately for the weapons. I mean, they were looking at the swords. Wow, isn't this cool? Isn't this nice bow? Wow. Ah. Then he immediately understood they weren't Brahmins because that's what they were attracted to. So this is one of the tests. And of course, we do that with little children sometimes. Isn't it? There's this test, you know, to determine their propensities. You put them in front of all these different things. And the parent is saying, please come for the books, please come for the books. But the kid usually goes for the money. And the parent is saying, damn it, I wanted a Brahmin. No, many parents are saying, this is ecstatic. I wanted my son to make a lot of money. So, yeah, so this is great, you know. My son went for the gold. So, anyway, so it's easy to understand, and people should engage accordingly. However, here's a however like caveat. Everyone should be cultivating the mode of goodness. This is mentioned in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that no matter what your varna is, you should cultivate the mode of goodness. Maybe you're doing activities that are generally considered to be in the mode of passion or ignorance or whatever, mixed modes. But you should be cultivating the mode of goodness in your consciousness. And the reason for that, given by Lord Kapila Dev, third canto, I believe is the ninth chapter, if I remember correctly. Anyway, many different places. He talks about devotional service in different modes in that ninth chapter too. The reason for that is that only in the mode of goodness can you become Krishna conscious. Only if your consciousness is in the mode of goodness is not sufficient to make you Krishna conscious, but it's necessary. That's a logical term. The example I give sometimes is the airport is not sufficient for you to fly anywhere, to go to the airport, but it's necessary because planes only take off from the airport. So in other words, you have to cultivate the mode of goodness. And then, as you're cultivating the mode of goodness, then you cultivate the transcendental Vishuddha Sattva. So that means practically in each and every one of our lives, even if you're a Kshatriya, or acting as a Kshatriya, or Vaishya Kshatriya, or whatever, you should be eating food in the mode of goodness. That means food that is healthy, gives body energy, and provides flesh. You know, not makes you like too fat, obviously. Food in the mode of goodness. You should be waking up early. Actually, it says that in the 11th canto, it actually states that too. That there's times of the day where there's different modes of nature. The 11th canto in the purport given by Śrīla Prabhupāda's disciples, and it's Sridharananda Maharaj and Gopi Prananda Prabhu, it says that midnight is made for ignorance. And Prabhupāda specifically many times said that everyone should wake up by 4 o'clock in the morning, before Brahma Muhurta starts. So these are injunctions made for everybody in whatever varna you're in. I mean, it's not that because you're a Shudra, you should be eating meat. Because meat or tasteless, stale, decomposed, putrid stuff, that's all the mode of ignorance. Or because you're a Vaishya, you should be eating hot pepper sabjis. Or Kshatriya. I remember there was, it was interesting, I was traveling with two sannyasis who were no longer sannyasis, and they were very much passionate, so every morning they would cook, ghee soup with hot peppers in it for the brahmacharis. And also chickpeas in it, you know. You can't think of a more passionate combination. Also, they put some sour cream in it, mixed the sour cream in it. You can imagine that combination, you know, sour cream, hot peppers, ghee. Wow. Chickpeas. I mean, that's enough to get you going. So unfortunately, it was enough to get them going somewhere else other than just on Sankirtan. You understand? Now they're both happily married. So, going, gone. So, the point I was making is that, yeah, that food and the mode of goodness should be eaten, even if you're, whatever your duty is. And that means things that are healthy for you. I mean, I've seen that actually in our ISKCON temples, and in India too. There's too much salt in the food. It's like sometimes you ask people, you know, put some vegetables in my salt. You ever experience that? But Pete, you're from India, so you like salt, I mean. But actually I was reading yesterday that people from India are more salt susceptible as far as high blood pressure and other diseases too. There's 40% more incidence of high blood pressure, diabetes, and all these lifestyle diseases from people from India than people from the West, because they're taking too much salt. So that's passion. Not only that hot peppers are passion, but too much salt, too much spices. It's passion. And you're not cultivating the mode of goodness. How do you know when you're not cultivating the mode of goodness? Your mind is not peaceful. Samadhamattapakshocham. That's not just for Brahmins, that verse. That you're not equal poised anymore, you're not austere, you're not, I mean, you're not, your mind's not clean, your body may be clean, you're not tolerant, confirmed, by Krishna. I mean, sometimes even here in New Orleans, I'm sitting in my room upstairs and I'm hearing screaming in the kitchen, and I run down and I say, what's the problem? You're all fighting each other? And I said, no, this is our love for each other. Jai, Shishi Radha Radha Kanta, Gornatai, Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Kijak. So that's very important. And then sometimes we come here to New Orleans and I come to Mangalarti and it's only me and the Pujari. So who's cultivating the mode of goodness, right? So that's very, Prabhupada makes that point again and again, that no matter what your service is, you may be driving a taxi, that's alright, that's Vaishnava business. It's no problem, we don't mind. It's wonderful you're driving a taxi and giving the results to Krishna. We have this nice temple because of all these wonderful taxi drivers here. I think it's ecstatic. I love taxi drivers. I used to drive a taxi before I joined the movement. And I gave the money that I made driving a taxi to the Hare Krishna movement when I finally joined it. But still you should cultivate the mode of goodness. That's the point I'm making. Whatever your business is, you know, food, music in the mode of goodness, not too loud, not destroying your poor eardrums. You know, this is a problem. You know, many devotees, they have I was just speaking to Vijaya Dwaita Maharaj, my godbrother, and he has to, you know, he has severe ear damage. Another one, Shankarshan Prabhu, he has severe ear damage. So you have to cultivate things that are healthy for the body. You understand? Not torture to the body. I mean, if you torture to the body, that's demoniac. So that's not in the mode of goodness. Just like I was speaking to someone yesterday who was a political extremist, and he was doing, he was from Puerto Rico, and he was doing fasts to get independence for Puerto Rico. I said, this is demoniac. Prabhupada specifically said that, you know, like anyone who does fast for political purposes, because it tortures, it disturbs the super soul as well as the soul. So anyway, so that's really the point. You cultivate the mode of goodness in all of your activities. whatever your activity is, you know, you cultivate the mode of goodness. And by cultivating the mode of goodness, then you're going to be able to think of Krishna. But if you're cultivating the mode of passion, you can never think of Krishna. Or what to speak of ignorance, you can never think of Krishna. Okay, so that's the varnas. And I think that's all we have time for today, because I can get into a whole discussion on the ashrams, which are, you know, that's a multi-day discussion, brahmacharis, grahasthas, vanaprasas, and sannyasis. So any questions or comments? No? That's good. Yeah.
I have a question. Back to the alcohol from the trees. When was that? When Prabhupada was there? Was here?
You mean from the trees? People do that now in Bengal.
No, no. You were saying, you know, back when y'all were there.
That was alcohol from the nectar drink, not from the trees. We were in America. We didn't take... I mean, I didn't drink it. That was when Prabhupada was there, yeah. I mean, it's not... People have this whole conception that when Prabhupada was there, you know, it was peace and love, like some big rainbow festival with the clothes on or something like that. It wasn't. I mean, there was a... Because we were all young. People always talk about the good old days. You know, like kumbaya, you know. We all join hands. Because we were young. I mean, we did a lot of crazy things in the good old days. And we fought with each other, right? People did things like that. Of course, we stole the Mahaprasadam in the middle of the night to eat. But that was fun. Yeah, we had competitions who could drink the most honey on Balaram's appearance day. You know, who could eat the most globjamins. You know, we were pretty wild in those days. It's not, I mean, things are a lot more peaceful now, I think, in our movement. Sometimes too peaceful, but anyway. But they're a lot more peaceful now in the movement than they were then. And yes, people did crazy things, because we had a lot of people join the movement and they were addicted to intoxication, especially if you were in a city like San Francisco. You know, some people would be coming off of an LSD trip in the temple. You know, we just find them on the street. Come on, you could be a Hare Krishna devotee. And so they woke up the next morning in a dhoti. At Mangalarti, you know. And basically, they didn't know what end of the temple room were the deities and what end was... But we just got them there, in there. Fed them a lot of prasadam, and now... And then Prabhupada went to preach, sometimes in nudist colonies, to make people devotees. You know, some of our leaders came from nudist colonies. Can you imagine that? One of them was living in a tree. You know, so things were, you know, the 60s were very wild times. Those of us who are, you know, 60s children, they're pretty wild, and the movement was pretty wild too at that time. And, but there was sincerity, there was a lot of love for Prabhupada, I mean, which is good. I mean, that also we need to bring back. But yes, the story did occur when Prabhupada was present. But Prabhupada wasn't in the room when devotees were doing it. Prabhupada wasn't physically present at that temple. But, one interesting story about waking up early. Prabhupada was in Mexico City, and he kept the devotees up real late at a preaching program in a place called Cuernavaca, which is right outside of Mexico City. And then when Prabhupada woke up, all the devotees were sleeping, including the deities. And Prabhupada got so angry, you know, he said, why don't you get up? We were up all night. No, you should get up for Mangalarti. I mean, Prabhupada was so strict with, especially the morning program. You know, and like I said, the mode of goodness Prabhupada was very strict with. You know, you find that list, you know, don't eat food cooked by non-devotees. That's one of the things. Nowadays, so many people go to restaurants. And I'm not talking about Hare Krishna restaurants. You know, I'm talking about, you know, order a salad at McDonald's or whatever, you know, French fries. French fries are dangerous. And so, But, you know, people still try to get away with it even when Prabhupada was present. Like there was a donut shop right next to the temple in 26 Second Avenue. And then Prabhupada would walk by there, and when the devotees were sitting, eating their donuts and coffee or whatever, they would actually go down in their seats like that so Prabhupada wouldn't see them. He'd be like, oh no, he's going to see us. So, I mean, Prabhupada was aware. I mean, Prabhupada even called his disciples his monkeys sometimes. Dancing white elephants, monkeys, you know. You know, it was wild. Wow, some music from the heavenly planets. So, you have another question.
What year did you come to the movement?
I came to the movement in 1971. Gainesville, Florida.
Really?
Yeah, it took me 2 more years to join because the devotees burnt me out in 1969. I went into the temple. I was a vegetarian. I was doing everything. And the devotees told me I was going to hell. Unless I joined the movement, they said, Kali Yuga's coming. You're going to be as short as a dwarf. That made me real scared. And living underground and eating human flesh unless you move in the temple immediately and shave your hair off. And, you know, I said to my friends, I said, I've got an overdose of Krishna consciousness now. So for the next 2 years, we avoided the devotees. If we saw a devotee coming, we'd turn the other way in our car and drive them full speed in the other direction. And it was only because of Prabhupada that I joined. Because what happened is that, you know, I just didn't want anything to do with... I mean, I was chanting, yes, and following the regular principles, but I didn't want anything to do with those fanatic Hare Krishnas. And the temple, I'll give you an idea, the temple present previously in Gainesville, Florida was Amarendra Prabhu, who was a student radical. And he approached Krishna consciousness just like one approaches the student radicalism. You know, the soapbox and yelling and screaming at you. And even after I joined, it was pretty heavy. So, but then what happened is that I heard Prabhupada was coming to Gainesville, Florida in 1971. And when I heard that, somehow or other, super soul in my heart said, all right, now it's time, you have to surrender. So 1 week before Prabhupada came, I walked into the temple, you know, with a big bunch of hair in it everywhere. And I said to the temple president, at that time it wasn't Amarendra, it was Sridhananda Maharaj. I said, can I join? And he said, yes. Of course, he also says that was the last time I was humble since I joined the Hare Krishna movement. Because we have a joking relationship like that. So and then, because it was just Prabhupada coming, like the energy, even 1 week before Prabhupada came, the energy was there. Of Prabhupada coming. I mean, anyone who's experienced, I mean, you've experienced that, Siddhi, too, that even before Prabhupada came, the energy preceded him. The spiritual energy preceded Prabhupada. You didn't even have to be in the physical presence. It was just like a week or two or a month before Prabhupada came, it was just like, it was like a tsunami of spiritual energy. And that's why I did what I did, you know, against my wishes. And joined the Hare Krishna movement. And then Prabhupada came, and then what can I say? I mean, it just immediately, I understood he was my spiritual master. And 2 weeks later, I wrote him a letter asking for initiation, and the temple president beat me up for going over his head. That was Amarendra again. He was chasing me with a broom or a mop or something like that. You know, I had to run for my life. Yeah, things were tough in those days. And then that was it. You know, I joined 71 Gainesville, Florida. And we immediately went on Sankirtan the first day. Yeah, joined the movement to get me to, you know, move in, become a brahmachari. The temple president said, all right, so you can be the treasurer. I said, oh, that's nice. some peaceful activity. But then we discovered there was no money in the temple. So, you know, there's not much to count, you know, and there's no money. So then he said, no money, you have to go on Sankirtan. I said, Sankirtan, what, me? And you had to wear a dhoti in those days. It wasn't a question of putting a wig on or, you know, all those. That's the changing clothes, you know, Western clothes. You went out in the street where all your friends were like zooming by in their cars. And you weren't even wearing a dhoti, you were wearing a bed sheet. Because there was no such thing as dhotis in those days. I mean, as far as from India, I mean, there's no such thing as kurtas, because we just wore Western shirts with bed sheets. And the brahmacharis, they wore saffron dhotis, and the brahmacharinis wore saffron saris. You remember that? Yes, saffron bed sheets. Yeah, saffron bed sheet. And the married people wore yellow bed sheets. Right? And then yellow, men and women, they were, men and women, married women wore yellow bed sheets. And then single men and women wore saffron bed sheets. But it was actually good. They were permanent press bed sheets, so they didn't get wrinkles. And so then we went out, and I had to, every time one of my friends drove by in his car, I ducked into a doorway to avoid him seeing me. You know, it was embarrassing. Going out, you know, Gainesville's a small town. Everybody knows everybody else. So anyway, so we distributed Prabhupada's magazines, actually, the first day. Back to Godhead magazines. And it was a learning experience. So it was fun. And it's fun now. It hasn't stopped being fun. Because we're doing what we like to do for Krishna. And that's the point I'm making in class. Do what you like to do for Krishna. But the results have to be given to Krishna. So any other questions or comments? Yes.
No.
Yes.
Any sutra try to become something else like a Vaishya or Kshatriya or Brahmin?
You can change your nature. It takes a long time. There's a story of Viswamrita Muni. You know the story of Viswamrita Muni? It's from the Ramayana Mahabharata. That he was a Kshatriya. And so what happened is he went and he paid a visit to Vasishtha Muni with his army and everything like that. And Vasishtha Muni said, you know, I'll entertain you. And he was able to entertain this whole big army because he had Nandini, his desire cow, the cow which could produce unlimited milk. So this king, Viswamrita Muni, he decided to steal the cow, and there ensued a fight. And to make a long story short, Vasishtha Muni kept winning. You know, there's one fight after another. So Viswamrita Muni started performing austerities, become more powerful, he still got defeated, and there were so many fights back and forth, and there's not time to tell all the stories. But ultimately, after performing all these austerities for like, say, thousands of years, he was able to become a Brahmarishi. So, you can do that, you can try it, although I have seen practically that people do have a certain nature. And, like, it's better to do your own service, even though it has so many imperfections, than do another. That's Krishna's words in the Gita. One shouldn't try to emulate or imitate another's service, because it won't work. Like, if you're by nature a Vaishya and you try to take sannyas, then, I remember another funny story. One of my godbrothers took sannyas. He was a Vaishya by nature. And wherever he went, he would open up his jacket and there'd be things to sell. You understand that he had all sorts of things to sell. You know, like to buy incense, you know, like this. You know, so, you imagine a sannyas, he comes to town and just like, I got a deal for you, Prabhu. So, I mean, and obviously, yeah, now he's happily married, you know, he's a nice devotee and everything like that. He wasn't fit to be a sannyasi. He tried. I mean, better to have, what is it, loved and lost, and better to have tried, better not to try to be a sannyasi if you're not equipped to be a sannyasi. You know, basically, we do have an inherent psychophysical nature. And unless you perform so many austerities, I don't see people changing their nature. I just don't see it. I see people becoming devotees, pure devotees, because anybody, whatever your nature, you can become a pure devotee. I mean, there's many devotees of Lord Chaitanya that were just you know, Shudras were pure devotees. I mean, Lord Chaitanya made a dog, two dogs go back to Godhead. So there's no hindrance. Krishna says anybody performing devotional service can become, go back to Godhead, whatever, whether you're of lower birth or whatever, Sri Sudra, Dvijavadi Nam, it doesn't matter. You just work for Krishna. So we shouldn't discriminate thinking that Brahmana is better inherently spiritually. A Brahmana, you know, in the modes of nature may be considered like the guru of the other varnas. However, spiritually everyone's equal. This is a very important point. On the spiritual platform, I mean, that means men and women, they're equal spiritually as spiritual entities. I mean, I just got a letter from someone today, which is one of these crazy letters. He's saying that I just went to Fiji, and you have women chanting there sometimes. And he said, don't you understand? This is not, you know, basically this is degrading. And it's crazy. You know, Prabhupada said that if a woman is a devotee, her association should be accepted. And Prabhupada himself arranged for the Govinda prayers, the Brahma Samhita that we chant every morning to be chanted by ladies. You know, but devotees sometimes get all these conceptions, materialistic conceptions, like in New York one time, they wouldn't let the ladies chant japa in the temple room. And Prabhupada, when he heard that, he said, you know, then they should go to the forest, the brahmacharis. If they're so disturbed, what are they doing in New York? You know, if they're getting disturbed by some lady chanting Hare Krishna in the temple room, what to speak of when they walk out in the streets of Manhattan? The ladies won't be chanting Hare Krishna. They'll be chanting, I love you. Or love me. So, you know, right? So, you know, Prabhupada was just upset with this sort of discrimination that people have according to the type of body someone has. And the sexism, you know, all this stuff is just nonsense. It's just nonsense. If someone's a devotee, we take the dust of the feet. I mean, just like that one devotee, Kalidas, he would take the prasadam from all, the remnants of the prasadam from everybody, you know the story. And in Mayapur and Navadvipa area, it didn't matter if they were Shudra. There was this one person who I think was in the Chaitanya, it was a Jadu Thakur. He was a Shudra class, and Kalidas offered him, he offered him a mango. And he waited outside until this Jadu Thakur and his wife ate the mango, and they threw the pits and the skin out, and he went into the garbage and he sucked on it. He actually sucked on it. And he was from Brahmin class, and he was taking the remnants from Shudra, or Mahajan, like that. And then, because of that, he was the only person Lord Chaitanya really allowed to take the foot bathing water. When Lord Chaitanya went to the Jagannath temple, he bathed his feet at the Singhadwara gate, and he allowed him to drink the water. But not too many times. Once, twice, and he said, that's enough. You know, Krishna's fulfilled your desire. But Lord Chaitanya actually allowed it, because he had that faith in Vaishnavas regardless of the caste. I mean, if one actually sees a Vaishnava of a particular caste or a particular, you know, race or a particular, you know, whether man or woman, that's hellish intelligence. That's hellish intelligence. You know, seeing the Vaishnava according to their body, it's considered one of the ways of offending Vaishnavas according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the Harinam Chintamani. So, anyway, so the point is, you don't really need to change your nature. You just need to do what you like to do for Krishna. I mean, why worry about it becoming, because it's not going to work. You're going to end up unhappy, frustrated, and then ultimately your own nature will come out. That's what I've seen. You know, obviously, if you're an absolutely pure devotee and you're seeing Krishna and you realize you're a spiritual body, but I haven't met too many of those lately. Have you? Obviously, in those circumstances, yeah, you can do anything. But you know, most of us, and down to earth, you know, most of us are down to earth, and we have to just function according to our bodies. For Krishna. For Krishna. And that's also the ashrams too. And that way you can, Prabhupada said, if you're situated properly in the right ashram, you can fight Maya. Giving the example of Gajendra, the elephant, fighting the crocodile. Then you can fight Maya. I mean, you can actually be strong in Krishna consciousness. But if you're not happy, how can you be strong in Krishna consciousness? If you're not looking forward to every day joyfully, you're doing something wrong. If you're not getting up in the morning and thinking, wow, I get to do this today for Krishna, then maybe you need to adjust your service. If you're thinking, oh no, why do I have to get up? Oh God, the stupid alarm clock. Then you're doing something wrong. It's not that something's wrong with Krishna, something's wrong with what you're doing. Okay, any other questions or comments about these points? Or so today we have a nice program tonight, right? Anuradha, that's the name of Lalita, actually. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
The name Anuradha is a name of Lalita Devi. Yeah, Anuradha means the follower of Radha, and that's Lalita Devi. So that's a very auspicious name, a spiritual name, actually. Anuradha, follower of Radha. Lalita Devi. And so, anyway, there'll be bhajans tonight and some preaching in you know, association with Vaishnavas. Like that. So, I guess that's it. It's time for prasadam now. Yes. That everybody likes to eat. No matter whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Because Brahmins, they like sweet things. Kshatriyas, they like spicy things. Vaishyas is a combination. And Shudras will eat any damn thing. Old stale, doesn't matter, like Limburger cheese. It doesn't matter. The smellier, the better. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.